Welcome to The Beauty of Conflict, a podcast about how to deal with conflict at work, at home, and everywhere else in your life. I'm Chris Marie.
And I'm Susan.
We run a company called Thrive, Inc., and we specialize in conflict resolution, stress management coaching, and building strong, thriving teams and relationships, both in person and virtually.
We are starting 2021 with a series based on our book, The Beauty of Conflict, for teams. We'll be sharing tips, tools about how to make your team work more effectively, especially in this remote and virtual environment. We hope you'll walk away from this episode and the series with some fresh ideas that change your day, your week, and even your life.
Hello, I'm Chris Marie Campbell.
And I'm Susan Clark.
And we are continuing our Beauty of Conflict for Teams, Harnessing Your Team's Competitive Advantage book series on this podcast. And today we're also honoring Women's History Month in the month of March.
And we're doing it during the first week of March, which also happens to have International Women's Day as a part of it. So it seemed like a perfect time to do this because, frankly, right now in the world, you know, women are leaving the workplace. Mm-hmm. And now there's a lot of press out there about how that has to do with the pandemic and all sorts of things.
Taking care of kids, having to leave work to stay at home.
Various
work at
there's,
home.
There's various bits to that.
Yeah.
You know, and we will talk more about that. But, you know, this isn't necessarily just a new problem. And part of why we could bring it in with our team series is it is something that we have addressed and brought up in the book prior to the pandemic.
Yes. We covered this in chapter 14. Why you should be emotional at work. And emotions are not a male or female thing, but what they found, and we talk about this in the book, is women usually take a hit for being weak or too emotional in the workplace. But more and more research shows that women leaders are better at building relationships and demonstrating empathy. And as a result, they are overall they're better at getting organizational results because empathy is tied to our ability to resonate and feel emotion with another. And women score higher on these softer skills. Even in a Harvard Business Review study that evaluated more than 7,200 people, women scored higher not only in the expected areas, but actually every level. They were rated by their peers, their bosses, the direct reports, even other associates as better leaders overall. So we believe this speaks to the trust and influence that's built through empathetic relational leadership by men and women, our ability to feel and relate to the feelings of others.
So we want to sort of kick it off there because we do want to say we really don't believe this is just a pandemic issue. Because to take that back even further, just recently I was listening to a podcast with Brené Brown and Melinda Gates, and they were talking about her book that had been released, The Moment of Lift, How Empowering Women Changes the World. Now, Melinda Gates has traveled all over the world as part of the Gates Institute and has spoken to leaders everywhere, as well as people in their various cultures. And what she's discovered over and over again is when women get empowered, cultures change.
This is when women are in governments or councils or just having women a part of even boards and leadership teams.
Well, it was interesting because part of the interview was she was traveling during this past year. And so she had the chance to sit down with the Prime Minister of New Zealand, Ardern, who's done such a wonderful job. Now, and most of the time when you talk to people about how it's going, they talk specific, like these countries were doing exceptionally well dealing with the pandemic. But when she asked the question, they didn't want to talk about how they were doing well, Chris Marie. They wanted to say, you know, I'm still concerned because we're doing okay, but like with around New Zealand, it was like, but some of these islands around us are not, and I'm focused on that. Same when she talked to the Chancellor of Germany, and she was saying, no, I'm actually really concerned about some areas in my country that are more poverty related where these things are not happening.
Susan, what do you make that mean?
Well, I mean, in that conversation, you know, it really is about women can and tend to take a more systemic approach.
You know, bigger picture.
Systems, more looking at all of the interactions, not just a linear, we're getting better, we're getting worse, but looking at how something is a systemic issue within a family system, within an organization, within a government. And that tends to be more like every A, B, C, and D all have a part, not A equals plus B, you know.
The linear view. Yeah, that really makes sense.
Not as cause and effect. Now, not that these are inherently men things or women things,
right,
but they are things that tend to have been strengthened through women over the years and are worth having in the workplace, are really vital to having in our workplace.
Yeah. I know sometimes in our workplaces can be places where, you know, I've just got to climb the ladder. It's all about me, my personal brand. How do I get the bigger raise, the promotion? And when cultures, business cultures foster that, you really lose, both in men and women, that systemic, wait a minute, we all have to cross the finish line together. We want to bring this whole company forward. And I think women who typically, not always, but typically are taking care of a whole family, not just their career, but the kids and the husband or the partner and the house, and have to think more systemically, like you're saying, include all those different elements.
And make them all important. So, yeah. You know, that's actually probably one of the biggest challenges is that, I mean, in general, we as individuals do this differently. Some people focus in on something and other people are much more like able to kind of spread out and see the entire big picture.
We talked about this in narrow focus and wide focus.
Yeah. And I think about it related. I mean, I'm going to talk about horses just because, you know.
And, just because, Susan, you work with horses and people. People with horses.
Well, what I love about working in horses is in their natural state in the herd, it's usually not the stallion or the male horse that's the leader. It's the mare that's the leader. And the reason for that isn't because she's the strongest or whatever, but what it is she's in her body. She's able to kind of track and identify when there's a crisis and when something's happening.
Because she's so calm? She sees so much more?
I don't know if calm, but definitely wired to pick up the information beyond her. So she is not focused. Like the stallion might be the strongest and is focused on procreation. Let's just get more horses in the herd or, you know, or fighting off or doing this. But while that's happening, she's sort of monitoring, are we safe? What's going on here? And she sets very clear boundaries. She doesn't need to, you know, and that's how come she becomes the matriarch of the herd, because she's the one who's going to identify when safety is cracked and do something about
it. She will lead the herd to a safer ground.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That is something that is really valuable. And I think we sometimes miss both, you know, that energy of the stallion needs to be important, but equally important is the person who can, the horse or the person who is paying attention to everything that's going on around.
You know, it's so funny because I don't think in our society we reward that type of person who sees the bigger picture and maybe even does preventative things before they blow up into big issues. We tend to reward the problem solver, oh, the hero of the day, versus, wait a minute, I was kind of thinking of this and I quietly took care of that piece. And so we're continuing to move forward.
Yeah. I mean, and these are just things that we want to continue to foster and have in the workplace. Like another set of data that was fascinating to me is some of the data they've been looking at in what happens in venture capital and investment firms. And, you know, there's a lot of research that founders, when there's women or at least a team that is not just men, and there was women on that team, they always outperform the men.
I was thinking the research by All Raise, which is they found that only 15% of venture capital funding is allocated to female founders. But what's more troubling is despite a lot of concern and advocacy, we really haven't given money to those women founders, but they actually outperform the men in terms of ROI on investment. Women rule.
They perform. Female founded companies that have been funded or 63% better than their all-male funding teams.
Yeah,
so that's one set of research. There was another one through the UN Marian Hoffman Foundation that found that women-led teams generate 35% higher return on investment than all-male teams.
You can tell we're looking at our research that we collected for this podcast because these are just small samples of how our bias against women leaders is, oh, she's not going to do as good a job. But actually, she gets a higher ROI, and she's not given the same level of lift that male founding.
And, you know, I did find it helpful when I was listening, and I've heard, I mean, this goes all the way back to years ago. I'm going to show my age here. When I got to hear Gloria Steinem speak, you know, when it was during the whole women's movement. But the thing that struck me when she was speaking was she was like, this isn't about women's equality. This actually gives equality to men who, if they want to be at home, they could be at home. If they want to do this differently, it's not about taking anything away, or it's about leveling the playing field. It just was so profound when she said, you know, we're not just talking about this for women. Mm-hmm. We're talking about it for all, for men, you know.
Well, it goes back to what Melinda Gates was saying, like societies, because she studies all sorts of societies, that when women are involved, better results happen for all, yeah, not just for
she's not actually saying women are better. She's just saying the same thing we talk about in diversity and inclusion. The more diverse and inclusive we are, the more likely we are going to get to new, creative, integrative, and important ideas that we need to have to better handle the challenges we're facing these days.
Which is really the main tenet of our book, The Beauty of Conflict, because the more diverse your opinions, which means they come from diverse people, the more you're going to have that larger team IQ to make better decisions. And it's interesting, this other piece about women as onlys, because mm-hmm. I remember early in my career, I was a Boeing engineer. Mm-hmm. And when I made it to flight test, I was one woman out of 80 male engineers. There was one woman manager, but I was the only one in the pack. You know, they found that this wasn't about that level, but I know how uncomfortable it can be to be the only woman. Like, you don't want to show any weakness. You don't want to be emotional,
yeah,
but
well, you know, and I think what they found, you know, they have done more research now, even since your days, you know, some of the research shows that women who are in those positions, they face even more challenges, more pressure. They feel more pressure. They experience more microaggressions. They often have to provide additional evidence of their competence. Mm-hmm. You know, they will be questioned. Their judgment will be questioned.
I mean, even they give statistics. 49% of women will be questioned on their judgment versus 32 in a more balanced environment. They'll be mistaken for someone more junior. And this happened to a client of ours. She was a CVP at a high-level company, and she traveled with a male person, a junior person. And they, when she would come to the client, they would always talk to him. They would defer to him. And she's like, no, it's me. That happens all the time. Or the other piece is subjected to unprofessional and demeaning remarks. So, you know, these are usually senior level women that experience this, but no wonder it's so hard. And I think a lot of times women go numb or just think, this is what I've got to do to make it. They just take it.
And, you know, we're talking about this. And yes, this is true for women. And it is even more true for women of color. And yet these are the challenges we're facing right now about diversity and inclusion. Mm-hmm. And then how do you begin to address these things? Mm-hmm. And now, because really, there's a lot of research with what's happened in the last year, we're likely to go back way back in terms of there was movement forward for women.
Yeah.
Now it's just going further and
isn't
further
back.
Isn't it
like 240 years before we hit gender equality?
Oh, that was before the pandemic.
Oh my.
And it's actually worse now because what's happening is a lot of women are in situations where they're leaving the workforce because they're prioritizing family. That's not just childcare, it's elder care, it's all sorts. In our country, we have not had a Medical Leave and Family Act, any type of law or public policy about it until 2020.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of research out there about, you know, how much it costs. There's this all this unpaid labor related to childcare, adult care, cooking, cleaning, also. And now even in a lot of the women who had service jobs or were in different jobs during the pandemic have lost them.
Yeah. The Office for National Statistics in the UK estimated that the value of this unpaid work, which is what Susan was talking about, is close to $23,500 per person. That's in 2016. And it's Melinda Gates was saying, daily in the UK, women work 100 minutes more than men of unpaid labor. And in the US, it's 90 minutes. On average, over a lifetime, that's about 7 years more of unpaid work than men. That's just staggering.
But, and the thing about that is that's things like family leave. So mm-hmm. now I find this fascinating because they really have showed research that in other countries, most men, you know, they have paternity leave, family leave, kind of they've genderized it.
Yeah, degenderized
it. And some countries, you know, men don't hesitate to take paternity leave. Mm-hmm. Here, most men don't take it. Now, I happen to have been fortunate enough. I have my nephew was born during this pandemic, and I was so proud of my nephew because he took his paternity leave.
So your grandnephew was born and your nephew took it.
I said, yeah. And so it was kind of neat because that is not everyone does that.
I know.
And I love that we were getting closer to that being maternity, paternity, doesn't make a difference.
Even my aunt passed away and my cousin, who had a very high prestigious job. Now, I don't know if this was the main reason, but she left her job to take care in the last 6 months because of the decline of my aunt. And so again, another woman choosing family, which makes sense, but it's still an impact to our workforce.
So we bring that up because we believe that, you know, having women in the workplace is vital and important. And we may have to change some of the things that we value, reward, and make so important to be able to actually take a more, maybe a more systemic view in the way we look at things and the way we see things to support. You know, it's not all about just getting in the hours or, you know, getting more work done, or it is about the relationships and taking the time to give people what they need, whether it's because of stress or because of some other reason.
Because if doing that, that person is going to have much more resiliency and have better results long term. So I think we have this short term focus, like you're not producing results now, bye. And it's like, wow, how can we take care of this human? Because we have invested so much time and effort into this person and they have all this experience. We don't want to lose that. How can we support them through this time to keep them?
You know, and we have had a lot of different movements, like, you know, the Me Too movement has been helpful in trying to kind of put some attention on some of the issues related to sexism in the workplace, harassment. The biggest challenge with all that, though, is how do you begin to really have the real conversations, not get people to have good conversations, but to actually have the real conversations?
I think so often when businesses are confronted with these issues, they're like, okay, we need to do a diversity and inclusion training. We need to have policies. You can't say these words. We need to fire that person who made the bad mistake, somebody who said something inappropriate. We're not saying those aren't all part of the solution, but they're not the entire solution. Because if I'm a man and I made a mistake and I'm just fired, do I learn anything? I just learn I better shut up and, you know, say the right thing. I don't necessarily address my own bias.
I mean, yes, there has been a culture that has allowed this to happen. And maybe it's just the patriarchal culture, power, you know, but there's also been a way in which we've all participated in some way. Mm-hmm. And you don't just change unconscious behaviors
or bias
by punishing it and
shaming it. Yeah.
You have to let people find a way to hopefully get to the point where someone can say something that's sexist and somebody else can say, wow, that was uncomfortable. I didn't like that. Mm-hmm. What's going on?
Was it your intention to insult me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And talk about it versus just kick them out.
Brené Brown has done a lot of research on this. You do not create social change through shame. So when you shame somebody and make them wrong, that's not really going to change them. They'll kind of buckle down and feel more defensive. So it really is, how can we help teams and organizations take those moments when the mishap happens and pause and have the conversation like, whoop, that did not land okay.
And not just have the conversation, but really let someone be curious and interested in, did you see the impact that had what you just said? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes somebody who's been numb and blind to this, they don't see it.
Yeah.
And they actually need to experience and hear firsthand from somebody the impact.
Even when we've been in, because we've done this with teams, and a lot of times when we start, we pause, especially if it's the leader, and we're saying, well, time out. You know, we want to check something out with you. Everybody's like, no, it wasn't a problem for me. Not me either. Because it's the power dynamics. And it's like, oh no, we don't want to put the boss on the spot. He's got to be okay, or she's got to be okay. And we really have to cultivate, because there's still a human on the other end that's getting impacted, and have that conversation.
Yeah, because as long as there is no conversation, there's really going to be no change, no substantial change.
So listener, I want you to think about, what are situations where you have seen things that are sexist or racist or just inappropriate, and has everybody gone silent? Do you feel comfortable saying, hey, wait a minute, can I check out what your intention was? Did you mean to insult Mary over there? Because that's how I took it, but I want to find out. Can you speak up or do you go silent? Does everybody else go silent? How do you handle those moments? Because those are the moments, those are the magic moments. They feel like so threatening. But when you can learn the skills to, and the team can learn the skills of, those are the moments we have to mine and work through to actually create the change, to actually address the bias. It's not just the training. It's not just the policies.
And it's not just the numbers and the stats.
You know,
that is an important piece that we're going to be working on that for a long time.
Yes,
we often talk about the fact that, you know, teamwork, it's a discipline.
It's not rocket science, but it is a discipline.
And it takes doing the same things over and over again. And it means, you know, not just saying, well, you know, that's just Charlie. That's how he talks to all women. You know, no, you don't just excuse Charlie. And you also don't ostracize him.
Yeah.
Because eventually he probably will get fired for being Charlie. And he, you know, it'll be like, I was the, what's the word? The martyr.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, it's because no one ever gave you feedback and you never listened to feedback. Mm-hmm. But you want to be able to say to somebody who can repeatedly does something that's
inappropriate.
That was one of those times, Charlie. That you may not have realized it, but when you said that, it was really offensive.
It is. Susan and I are really want to support teams having a learning environment around diversity and inclusion, having these conversations. So, because it's not about making men or white or whoever, the person in power, wrong. It really is about how to help all of us, because everybody has unconscious bias and beliefs, and how to actually take them from unconscious to conscious. And that is it's an iterative learning process.
You know, I think about it because I do think it's really something to be said for. You want to be able to say to somebody, that's just not a good thing to say, but that's not as helpful as helping them understand why it's not a good thing to say.
Yeah.
Because if all I say to you is, that is a racist comment, that's a sexist comment, that's a whatever comment, that may or may not change you. You might be afraid.
No, I would be thinking, okay, I better cross that off my list. Now that's not safe to say. I don't actually really know why.
And maybe that seems kind of like, why wouldn't you know why? Do you not understand the pain of that? But a lot of times someone who has lived in privilege or someone who has lived without that ever does not know the impact.
Yeah.
And so trying to take that moment and say, instead of me just telling you not to ever say that again, I'd be curious, are you interested in how it lands over here when you do? Because, you know, if that person got interested in the impact and recognized, and maybe in that place, they would feel their own sense of, whoa, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. And if I step into that, I don't like that I did it. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a more profound transformative change.
I think that's really powerful, Susan. I just want to echo that, because we don't change because of a rule or shame, those two, which we tend to think is going to really work on the outside. But when I actually drop in and connect to, oh, this other person and how they felt over there, this happens in couples, it happens in teams. I think we can have it happen in our society. Like, that person really is hurting over there. And I could realize that that was me unconsciously, because I didn't really want to hurt them. This is a work colleague. I'm not trying to do that. And so to raise that awareness is, that's the change moment. That's when the penny drops and I start to care and I start to feel the ramification of my own behavior.
So we're bringing all this up because we actually do believe that supporting women continuing to be in the workplace is actually pretty fundamentally important to all of the things we need to change these days.
I know. Reminds me of when I was at Boeing and I was in engineering and the manufacturing. We had TQI, all these quality things. And safety became a really big piece of the puzzle. And because people would let safety issues go because it was unsafe to speak up. And this kind of reminds me of, if we can start to cultivate a culture like, wait, there's an issue, and not make it wrong for the person who spoke up, and also not punish the person who's made the foible, and actually investigate it like a safety issue, like a manufacturing safety issue, like, but it's a human safety issue.
With curiosity, with
dialogue,
vulnerability, with dialogue, and with emotions. Because we started this all talking about how, you know, we think emotions need to come into the workplace. And especially now, if we want to really address some of these issues, these big issues, it's going to be pretty vitally important that they come into the workplace.
Yeah. So we wanted to share some tips for you if you are wanting to support people that you see. One is to reach out and connect. And that may seem awkward because we're in this virtual environment, but still connect to people and create relationships and be an ally, especially if you're in a leadership role or a privileged class, whether you're a man, a white man, or a white woman, or I don't know, you're just the boss, to actually really be an ally and say, wait a minute, time out. I really want to check this out and find out what's going on here. Support the person who is either trying to speak up or has just been impacted. You can tell has been impacted in some way.
And also, remember, this is about having real conversations. So, you know, it's not about doing this right. It's about doing this real, which is going to mean saying sometimes, I had no idea. I think I just said something that really wasn't too smart. Help me understand what happened.
So the only way I can know that is if I'm actually tracking and being curious about the impact, what may be the impact over there, mm-hmm. and asking for feedback from people around me. Mm-hmm. And so those are some tools you can start to cultivate on the team and maybe having a conversation. How do we deal with these issues? That's a great team discussion to have with your team.
Even the people who have been identified as privileged, this is going to be painful for them. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to deal with something. And that part has to be dealt with compassionately too. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't just expect people to override, even if it's been systemic privilege for eons. There's a place where that has to be, someone needs to be able to talk about that as well.
Yeah, it's like educating with compassion versus shame. Mm-hmm. And it's tough when somebody who has been so marginalized over and over and over again, it makes sense that you'd want to lash back, but you know, it makes perfect sense and it doesn't work to create change.
Well, and it's fine if you don't want to hold that, but other people in the room can hold a space for yeah. all parties. The person who has every right to be outraged and angry, and for the person who may be at that moment feeling like they're under attack and don't have a clue how they got there.
Yes.
And so it's not, we're not saying that the people who have been victimized all this time need to be the ones who hold that space.
No,
that's we're just saying someone needs to be able to hold that space.
So be an ally.
Yes.
Be an ally, be willing. And actually build these skills on your team to have these real conversations and mind those moments and have the discussion of how do we handle, before it happens, maybe, how do we handle racist comments, sexist comments, even smartest comments, like that. We work in one culture where if somebody asks a dumb question, it's like contempt, the eye rolls.
Yeah.
You know, that's the same sort of conversation you want to have. And not keep going numb to those behaviors, not keep colluding with them.
Or just policyizing them. I
yes.
don't know if that's a word.
Right.
To get rid of them. Because you can get rid of the words, but you can't get rid of the emotional content that's underneath that unless it gets addressed and dealt with.
And that's where the real change occurs, is that underneath piece. Okay. So hopefully this has been valuable. We have tons of other content that we are releasing on LinkedIn on Thrive Inc. So if you haven't followed us on LinkedIn at Thrive Inc., do that now because we've got new content every day and we've got fun stuff. Like we've got playlists, we've got videos, we've got polls, all sorts of neat things. So be sure to follow us at Thrive Inc. on LinkedIn.
Okay, take care. Wow, Krishna Marie, I have sure been enjoying doing this series for teams and utilizing our chapters from our book, The Beauty of Conflict, Harnessing Your Team's Competitive Advantage. It's been fun to go back and review the material and apply it to virtual teams.
It's true. And it's so much good bite-sized material in these chapters. I mean, if I do say so myself. And if you want us to speak at your organization or work with your team, yes, virtually, we've been doing that, team sessions, or coach you or leaders on your team, please reach out to us. You can check us out at our website, www.thriveinc.com. That's thriveinc.com. Or send us an email. Write us directly. We're happy to chat. thrive@thriveinc.com. That's thrive@thriveinc.com. Okay. Take care.